2018. The time is 8 a.m. In attendance are myself, Senator Stevens, Chair, Senator Begich, and Senator
Hughes.
So Senator Hughes and Senator Coghill will be here shortly. And I know Senator Giesel's in the hall, so we should all be here in a few minutes. So I want to start right on time because we have a timeline that we have to deal with. 8:40, the folks from the Board of Education need to go to their meeting. So we're going to try and get through this as expeditiously as possible. So we have a quorum for business, and today we have confirmation hearings for the appointees for the Alaska State Board of Education Early Development, and also for the University of Alaska Board of Regents. So as I said, a fairly tight window for the Board of Education appointees, and they need to leave here by 8:40. Is that correct? Okay, good. So to manage our time, we decided to have the appointees sort of come up here in a panel style and have a time to talk to them all individually. Any questions or comments from the members before we start? Thanks. If you come forward, we've got James Fields, who we all know for the last few years, Sandra Kowalski, Tiffany Scott, and Laurie Van Deese. Thank you all very much for being here. So, James, we'll start with you, and sort of like to have folks give a brief a personal background, what you bring to the state board, why you want to serve, and maybe your goals for this year. So, James,
thank
you very much for being here.
Thank you. James Fields, for the record, thank you for having us here and putting this together so we can do this in person. Just a quick note, the 8:40 time frame is because we actually now have a incoming board member orientation, so which is a first, which is good news, something else we've worked on the last few years. So this is their first board meeting, and so I would just ask that you ask your questions lightly because they're brand new to the board and may not have all the information. So
we always
that.
Do that. I welcome Senator Coghill to the table.
Yeah. My name is James Fields. I've been on the State Board of Education for 5 years. Governor Walker reappointed me, and so this is my confirmation hearing for my second term on the board. I've been chair of the State Board of Education for 3 years. I've been on my local board in Copper River School District for 9, and served as president there for several years as well. So that's my background in the way of boards and education. I've lived in Glen Allen for 15 years. Grew up in Oregon. Moved to Glen Allen for business opportunities and have businesses there locally. Partly what I bring is I am now the longest-term board member on the State Board of Education. Sue Hull and I came on at the same time, and Sue was not reappointed, and she's happy about that, to be honest, so she can kind of do some things at the age she's at. So I think I bring a history of where we've been the last 5 years, and I think we've done some good things. And so just continuing on that, where we're going, and I think we're in a good place, a different place than we were 2 to 3 years ago. It's just a different feel, a different place in education where I think we have momentum to move forward and try to move education in the right direction of the state of Alaska for all the students of Alaska, whether it's Anchorage or Sitka or Norvik, wherever it may be. So that's kind of my background history, and thank you.
Thank you, James, and let's just go right ahead.
Good morning. My name is Laurie Van Deese. I'm a retired Matsu Borough School District educator. I'm a lifelong Alaskan who grew up in Seward. My dad was a teacher in the Kenai Peninsula School District for over 25 years, so I chose to follow his footsteps and earn a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics with a teaching credential from Seattle Pacific University. My first teaching job was in the school in which I graduated, Seward High School. It was a very rewarding experience to be teaching students that I babysat in my earlier years. After I married a Palmer guy, I moved to the Matsu Valley and was one of the original staff who opened Colony High School. During my 11 years at Colony High School, I taught math, became a secondary guidance counselor, and coached girls basketball. Later, I transferred to Teeland Middle School and was the lead counselor who helped open this school. I spent my last 6 years in the Matsu School District working as the curriculum coordinator. I had the pleasure of being an integral player on the curriculum team, which established a district curriculum review cycle and developed guidelines for the curriculum review steps. My job was to facilitate the teacher leaders in updating and writing content area standards and selecting the classroom materials to assist in teaching those standards. I have to take a breath. I'm nervous. In 2010, I retired from the Mat-Su School District to become a full-time teacher and mother to my three children. Now, two of them have completed their formal education, and I work part-time as a substitute counselor for the district. I am also the president of our local community council. I'm excited about my opportunity to serve as a member on the Board of Education. I'm able to offer the board my experience as a public educator who has been a teacher, counselor, and curriculum coordinator, and also my experience as a homeschool educator. I have served on boards in the past and understand the importance of hearing various opinions while remaining a team player. I'm interested in serving on the board because of the commitment our leaders and stakeholders have taken to bettering Alaska's education for all children. Alaska's education challenge has laid the foundation and philosophy for this to happen. Increasing student success, cultivating safety and well-being, and supporting responsible and reflective learners. Commissioner Johnson said, "Our shared commitment to those values should be deliberate and intense as we transition to a new, more efficient and effective education system." I'm excited to be part of this work, and I look forward to working with Commissioner Johnson and the DEED staff. Thank you for considering my appointment to this board.
Thank you very much, Lori. Senator Geisel is with us. We have a full compliment then. Let's go on to Sandra.
Good morning. My name is Sandra Kowalski. I am currently the Director of Indigenous Programs at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. But previous to this job, I was 28 years in K-12 education in both rural and urban settings. I've been a school teacher, elementary, middle, and high school out in rural Alaska, as well as a principal in both rural and urban Alaska. I've been a district office administrator in both settings. Most recently, before I came to UAF, I was assistant superintendent in the Fairbanks School District, overseeing the elementary schools there. I feel like my perspective as a public administrator is going to bring some strengths to this position here on the State Board of Education. I'm very interested in this time in serving on the board because of the work that's been done by the Alaska Governor's Challenge. I'm excited about the culturally relevant focus of some of the work that's been brought forward and the student-centered learning initiatives involved in that challenge, as well as an interest in tribal compacting. So thank you for having me here.
Thank you very much, and we'll go on then to Tiffany.
Uvlalotak, good morning. For the record, Uvangali Inupak Sisira Nipisan. My Inupak name is Nipisan. Nalaog Michisira Tiffany Scott. My English name is Tiffany Scott. Angayukaka Kunyaglu Angaporaklu. My parents are Mike and Lydia Scott. Kikitagrung Mingurunga Aglan Kinyuvedka Nurving Mingurut. I'm from Kotzebue. My family is from Norvik. And I am married to my husband of 8 years, Chad, who's from the village of Norvik. We have two children together, Analak Taylor and Nalika Caleb. We live in Kotzebue, and they are students at the June Nelson Elementary School. A little bit of background. I'm from the Northwest Arctic Borough area, but went to junior high and high school out in the Mat-Su Valley. I'm a graduate in 2003 of Colony High School. I just finished nursing school, and I'm a registered nurse in our local emergency department at the Manilik Health Center in Kotzebue. Prior to that, I spent some time working with Nana Regional Corporation and Nana Development Corporation in the Government Affairs Department, and I am pleased to be here, and thank you.
Well, thank you all. I mean, this is a remarkable collection of people who are interested in serving on the board from all different backgrounds and a lot of education, public education experience. That's really valuable. So, reflecting on what's happening in the world, the shootings in Florida and the sort of enthusiasm that we see among the young people, the march right out here in front of the Capitol. Do you have any reflections on things we should be aware of and how we deal with the millennials and what we should know about how involved they are going to be in the future?
This is Sandra Kowalski. One of the things that I'm excited about right now in education is that we're learning new ways to make sure that our students are that they're taking lead in their own education and that they're engaged and they're finding ways to own what they're learning. So when we have young people out making statements and engaging in the way that they are, they're finding their way. Just as much as they're making a statement, they're finding their way. They're learning new skills so that they can be future leaders. So in terms of how to support young people in that regard, I think that giving them the space to do that, providing the leadership and the respect for their actions so that they know that they're listened to, and then you can have a conversation with millennials if they feel any young age group. Millennials are not. That's how young people should be treated. And it teaches them to be the emerging leaders that we want them to be.
Thank you. Thank you. Further reflections, James?
James Fields here. Obviously a horrible tragedy, the most recent one, and all of them are horrible tragedies, but I think it goes to Alaska Challenge. We talked about safety, we talked about community involvement and owning your community, and I think what this does is it shines a light on the fact that, look, we need to own our schools, we need to own our communities and what goes on in them, we need to own our problems, whether that's a bullying issue, whether it's not dealing with some of the issues in the school, and I think that it shines a light on that, and the students have basically said, look, we want to take some ownership, we want to do what's right, and I think it shines a light on what the student climate is. A lot of times it can be very good, and a lot of times it can look good in big pockets, but there are those small pockets that it isn't good, and I think it's healthy for the students to react. I think it's healthy for us to react to some extent and be proactive, obviously, at this point. But for instance, in our district, we have guidance counseling, but our emphasis is on getting a social and emotional counselor that can reach out to those kids, that has a heart for the students, and that can maybe avoid some of these tragedies just because you've got somebody in the school that's reaching out. And we've talked about that in the AK Challenge, about the importance of the behavioral side. And if the students see that, I think it's good for them to go to local boards and show their emphasis of what's important to them in their school. And the personalized learning is a critical piece because you own your education. So you have the education piece, you have the social and emotional well-being. So I think the AK Challenge covers a lot of it. Now we've got to put meat to that and kind of send out information to the schools and the districts about, look, this is what some schools are doing to take care of these issues, because again, we want it to be locally owned. We don't want to put mandate, in my opinion, we don't want to put mandates on the communities. We want to try to give them the tools to figure out what works in their culture, what their community needs, and then support that, whatever that may be.
Well, thank you. So we've been talking the last few years about civics education and the importance of our young people being involved in the communities and understanding what's going on and even voting. I think the latest figures of those youngest people voting is like 17%, just remarkably low. And recognizing that one of the reasons we have a public education system to begin with is to create citizens, do you have any reflection on what can we do, what can you do as a member of the board, what can you do to help our young people become more involved in voters?
Through the chair, this is Tiffany Scott. Mine began at home with my parents who, we know democracy doesn't happen without an active and engaged public. And this includes even, the youngest members of society. And that continued on through the classroom through my U.S. History and Government course with Phil Ingebretson at Colony High School, who, even at that support level helped develop and nurture within me a desire to be an active participant in the public process. So I think encouraging young folks in serving in whatever capacity, even beginning as volunteers, to be an active participant in, our public process is very important, and a lot of that has to deal with reaching out and messaging. And so that I hope that even my participation at this level encourages others as well.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Please, go ahead.
Through the chair, this is Lori Van Diest. I agree with what Tiffany said, and then I'm connecting it to your earlier question with the millennials and their demonstration And I think it's really important that we get the message out to the kids and actually to all of us as adults. Voting is so important. I mean, how many of us in this room are super voters? Do we vote in every election, including the borough election, or even the ones that we say, ah, it doesn't really matter? So I think it is key that we do have our civics teachers and our government teachers work with those students and have that be part of the curriculum. I don't know if it's necessarily something that we as a state board would mandate, but I think that is so critical because many of those students that aren't voting, their parents probably aren't voting either. And so it is something that does have to take place in the home. And the schools all have their own elections. I'm thinking about back when I was at Colleen High School, they have their elections of their student council, and that's an important thing. And so maybe those can be crafted to be more like a public election, like we go through as adults. And maybe schools can even do an election themselves within the school body and have all the students vote and have it be a, I hate to use the word fake, but have it be a mock election where they can decide within their body who they think would be the best representative or be the president or whatever. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lori. Well, just a reflection, after the march, I understand that the kids went back to the high school, those who could, who were within 3 months of being a voting age, and they registered to vote.
That's
That is remarkable. And it's a sort of a propitious time in our country with all of this going on, getting people more involved. So questions from members of the committee? Yes, Senator Begich.
I had two. One was a sort of a softball question about the Ed Challenge, but y'all answered that in opening statement, so I don't have to ask that one, which would have been about your support. But what I do have is, you know, over the last few years here in the Capitol building, the legislature has really wrestled with the issue of our Constitution has an explicit prohibition of public funds for private education, and there have been efforts to change that. And the board does have, in fact, sets policy for the state of Alaska. That's actually a role that you will have, and your ability to set that policy really depends on how much action you take or whether you choose to take action. So on that specific, rather controversial issue, what are your thoughts on the use of public funds for private education? And maybe just to get an answer from each of you, if that'd be okay.
I'll go ahead and start. James Fields, for the record. I'm a businessman, and so I believe, and yeah, it's a fine line, it's a controversial issue, I believe that competition is always good. So if there is a way, whether it's, I think Matsu School District does a good job of having competition within their public education. You can go to several different outlets and get education from several different places. That can't happen everywhere. But I believe competition will help our students. It basically makes the school or a school district have to compete for that, whether it's homeschooling, whatever it may be. So any way that we can make education competitive, I think is positive for the schools. It's just like me, if I've got a business that comes in or is thinking about maybe coming in to compete against me, guess what? I got to raise my game. It's just that's what happens. If not, I become apathetic. That's just human nature. So I think competition is healthy, and I'm sure that's probably controversial and probably opens up a can of potential worms. But that's what I believe is – I'm going to have six kids in Copper River School District from senior to kindergarten. And so the more that I can get Copper River School District to be competitive, whether it's in a homeschool program, whether it's online curriculum, that's going to benefit my kids. And I know that, and I want my teachers to be competitive. I want my superintendent to be competitive and reach out and try to figure out ways to gain more enrollment. Because guess what? That will bring more money into our school and allow more resources to be used. So I don't know if that answers your question, because it may or may not because competition can come in several different ways.
Since you posed a question, may I
follow up?
It almost doesn't, James and Mr. Fields. And what I'm asking is, are you supportive of a constitutional amendment, I guess, that would change the way that our Constitution now reads, which prohibits the use of public funds for private education? That's what I'm getting at.
Then, so you then have to define private education, because how would you define that?
To not, I won't go beyond this to get into an exchange, because I know we don't like to do that here. But the when I say private education, I mean not publicly funded, publicly provided education. So we have charter schools. We have amazing, Matsu is a good example. You brought that up, of amazing amounts of different kinds of concepts. We have homeschooling, which we support in the state of Alaska. I'm talking about funding to private entities that are not public entities with public funds. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I would have to see the specific bill or whatever it may be to say whether or not I'd be for or against it, because I think there's instances now where there may be money going into private institutions, but it's on a case-by-case class, one class or something institution. So I guess I'd have to see the legislation to see whether or not I could support it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Through the chair, this is Sandy Kowalski. Mr. Fields, I don't have a straight-up answer to your question there. I think that what I believe is that schools and communities need to develop educational system that meet the needs of students in that community and the goals for that community. I come from a background of not just K-12 education, but we also started a tribal education, a tribal school in Kotzebue when I was a young mother, and felt like the public school in that setting didn't meet some of my family goals for two of my four children. So it's important that we really get down to what students need and what communities feel that the goals are for their school community, whether that, and I don't have an answer to your question, but I feel like if I were in that realm looking to make decisions, I would be looking at whether the schools meet the community goals and the student needs of that community.
Thank you very much. For the comments, yes, Senator Hughes.
Good morning, and thank you all for being here. And I don't believe Tiffany mentioned, but she also served on the school board in Matsu. And I'll just say she also went to high school with my daughter. So really pleased to see the array of experience that you're bringing to the table. As you all know, the achievement gap is something that the education challenge is really all about addressing, particularly in the rural areas. And I think most of you know that I've lived in the rural areas in Ahuna and Bethel and Fort Yukon and had children in public schools, and that was in the 70s and the 80s. And come around to where I am now in 2017-18, this legislative session, and just, you know, really grieved that some of the same challenges exist, and in some ways it's even worse. So knowing that oil prices aren't what they used to be, and they probably never will be to that level again, and that we're faced with that fiscal challenge, and yet we still have this great need where we're spending, I believe it's second or third in the nation per student, but our academic results are at the bottom of that pile. And could you speak specifically to your vision as far as, and you can weave in things from the education challenge, of course, but strategies that you see that might be really start to change, you know, transform what's happening as far as in our rural schools. I believe that is probably, at least on my list, it's at the top of something I want to see change over the next couple of years. And with all you coming in with new term, on a new term, I feel like you are there to help lead that.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, this is Tiffany Scott. In speaking to your question, I think that the Northwest Arctic, through the tribal school, serves as an excellent model for excellence in responsible Indigenous engagement in educational delivery, one that is culturally focused, culturally responsive, and it includes community. And I think that in the rural areas, it takes that kind of an effort to bring about the outcomes and student achievement that is required to ensure a healthy future for not only our students but our communities. So I think bringing in community, having some of those tough discussions around the way that education is delivered is important to the success in rural areas.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, Lori Van Deest for the record. I would agree that we do need to involve the communities. I have not lived out in rural Alaska. Most of my background is from Seward and then in the Mat-Su Valley. But I think it's really important that we do involve the community leaders, and that's what makes me excited about Alaska's Education Challenge, because part of that is the tribal involvement. And I'm really excited to have Tiffany and Sandy on the board with me. I mean, we're all brand new, and I think that they will bring in that perspective that I don't necessarily have.
Thank you. Well, while we're on that subject, as a part of that study that took place with the commissioner, I never quite understood the whole tribal conflict. I mean, on the one hand, we as educators, as teachers, have a responsibility to take our students into careers and life and prepare them for success. I'm a little concerned if we go down a different path and concentrate entirely on subsistence living and hunting and fishing, as important as that is. Can you help me figure that out, how we can succeed with tribal compaction and still help our students succeed in life?
Through the chair, this is Sandy Kowalski. I hate it when I start answering a question with the word my skills will improve in that area.
It's common around here, believe me.
What's important for me as a mother and as an Alaska Native is that my children grow up grounded and that my grandchildren are grounded. I feel that for rural Alaskan students to be successful, there has got to be a sense of place about the world around them in their educational system. And just by the action of teaching a student to hunt and teaching a student their own traditional roots does not ground them in a way that holds them back. It provides them a foundation to go forward. Two of my four kids went through a tribal school system in Kotzebue, that one that Tiffany alluded to. That's also where I'm from. And they both are well-grounded. I would just have to say that they were also well-grounded academically when they transitioned into the big school where I was principal, ironically. So they went to the tribal school. They went to the school where I was principal. They were grounded. Anecdotally, I can also say that as principal of what we call the big school, June Nelson Elementary School in Kotzebue, I saw students earning the citizenship awards as they're coming from the tribal school into the big school. Now, Nikechot Ilisalveit has only 20 students. They're there for 3 to 5 years, immersed in Inupiaq language and culture. They're participating in cultural activities. They're cutting seal. They're cutting fish. They're preparing foods. They're going out on the ice with their teachers, and they're learning things. They come to June Nelson. Many of them, granted, haven't had the preschool, kindergarten, English reading strategies taught to them, but they're grounded. They're engaged. Academically, they did well, and I can tell you that citizenship-wise, as a principal, every time we gave out citizenship awards, I knew who the Nikechot kids were coming into a 500 school, student school, June Nelson Elementary from a 20 student school. Most of those were Nikechot kids because they were grounded in character and in values as well. So I don't think that giving communities that space to plan their own educational system is going to hold any students back. I think it's going to propel them forward.
Thank you, Sandra. Great answer. Thank you very much. Further comments?
Sure.
Please.
Through the chair, to the members of the Education Committee, Tiffany Scott again. I'm in agreement with Sandy, Member Kowalski, in that including cultural and language components of an education help reaffirm and in some instances restore the cultural identity that is so important toward creating a well-rounded and a whole Inupiaq person, Inupiaq, non-Inupiaq, but just having those components be a part of an everyday education, I think will serve them well, whether or not they stay in rural areas or they move on to more urban areas in state or out.
Thank you. Further questions?
Just one last one.
Yes, Senator Begich.
Perhaps less controversial. Early education. This is an issue that means a lot to me. I think standards-based quality education, one that our department is actively involved in, is critical for learning. What's your position on early education? We don't have it universally here today, but I'm hopeful that someday we will. at least universal voluntary pre-K and early ed. So what are your thoughts on that?
Through the chair, Senator Bigich, this is Sandy Kowalski. I am hoping that we can expand preschool experiences and services across the state, especially in communities where, especially in rural communities for that matter. When we were in, when I was in Northwest Arctic, we had a two-year kindergarten program. I'm not sure if it's still there. It's still there, two-year kindergarten. And that was a strong foundation that provided students early learning experiences before they started their first grade experiences. Even in the tribal school setting in Kotzebue, we started school at 3 years old. I believe that families need that support and opportunity to help prepare for school.
Through the chair, Lori Van Deese for the record. I believe that early education is important, and I would like to see it expanded. I think it's important to have the students grounded to understand about how the education system works, but also to be able to give them time to play and give them time to explore and to figure things out. I'm just listening to Sandy's answer that she gave about the tribal school that was happening where she's from. And I think that it's great that kids get grounded, and I think that can be part of what can happen with the early education and with having families that maybe need some extra support, and they would be able to get that.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. Yes, Senator Cargill.
First of all, thank you all for being willing to serve, and the buy-in to the education challenge, I think, is going to be a big deal as we move forward. Early education is one of those issues, but for me, one of the focuses is on those sixth and seventh graders. It seems like where we're losing children as far as academic excellence starts there, and they enter into high school really unprepared in many ways, probably because socially everything in the world is marketed to them, just everything. They seem to be hitting that emotional speed bump in life that is significant. So just from your perspective as people who have been involved in the system, people that are now going to manage that, my big concern is that's where predators go after children, that's where marketers go after children, that's where they're emotionally intense with each other. All those things happen, but that's also where we lose them academically in many ways. Is that something that either one of you have thought about, how we can help those youngsters get through that age in life?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, this is Sandy Kowalski. I have some thoughts on that. I'm a former middle school principal in Fairbanks and also worked with the school board in Fairbanks on the strategic plan and putting that initiative into place, and through that process did some research on whether students who attended middle school settings had any chance of had any better chance of finishing high school, and I can tell you that in that research, students who went through a middle school transition, in other words, attended a seventh grade or a sixth grade beginning middle school, they were more challenged in high school, in ninth grade and tenth grade, in making good grades and completing and staying in high school. We got in Fairbanks, when we were looking at that research, we decided to try to develop some opportunities for families to decrease that the number of transitions their students go through, and to give their middle school students a smaller school setting. And we work towards creating more K-8 settings in Fairbanks, and that's going on right now. It's happening just this semester. They're working towards that to open up some of these K-8 settings in Fairbanks next year. And I think that what's key to remember about that age group is developmentally they are focused on their social settings more than they are a lot of times with what, you know, their academic setting. The idea that that students attending middle schools are lost, though, I think that has a lot to do with the middle school that they're in and the kinds of relationships and opportunities that they provide for students to connect with one another and connect positively with adults. middle schools are harder settings because you have larger numbers of 6th and 7th grade students together. They're just naturally going to try and connect with one another, and you really need to work proactively to get them to form relationships with the positive adult in the school community and form positive relationships with one another.
Through the chair, James Fields, Senator Coghill. I'm in a rural school district, and Glen Allen, for instance, is K through 12, all in one building. Of course, we have an elementary end and kind of a 6 through 12 end. But I believe personalized learning is a big part of that, because a lot of times there's a disconnect between the elementary to the junior high to the high school, and that's what Ms. Kowalski is talking about. Personalized learning, basically, and a lot of times when they go from 5th to 6th grade, they're not really ready to make that transition. And so not only are they dealing with the social-emotional stuff, but now they're going into a classroom and they're not really ready, which obviously complicates matters. Whereas personalized learning, if there's a connect between 5th to 6th grade, that helps, because then that teacher can say, okay, this is where they're at, and they can then they can personalize the education for them. So at least that gets the academic piece out of the way, in the way of, boy, I'm failing, or I'm not as good as so-and-so. And when they're like you mentioned, they're starting to compare themselves to others and that whole social side, that removes a lot of that. So I think the personalized learning piece is critical. Trying to connect those schools that have breaks, that have hard breaks, or even that don't, is critical to get communication going from K through 12. And to go back to early education, I don't necessarily think it has to be something that the state does. For instance, Copper River Native Association, they have a program right now that is early education, not only for the kids, but also for young parents. And that's a Native organization that's taken that on. So I think there's partnerships that can happen, collaboration that can happen between the district and other Native organizations or private business organizations. The reality is we need to make the communities and those businesses in those communities own the education in their communities and know that, look, this is going to help us out long term. And I think if we do that, we meaning districts, do that effectively, there are dollars and programs that I think that can be had when you bring those businesses into the fold instead of leaving them out there out to the side. Bring them in. This is a state problem, not only just for the government side, but for businesses. And I mean, for me, for instance, I have a hard time getting employees. So it would benefit me if we were brought into the fold and you know, brought into the classroom to help with what needs to go on. And I think having students understand why they're there. Why do you go to school? I guarantee, I've asked my boys this. They don't say I'm there to learn. But if you change the culture and say, yes, we're here to learn, whether it's culturally relevance is critical. It has to be relevant. For the millennials, you have to make education relevant. If not, they're not going to show up. When we went to school, we did it because we had to. It's a different culture, right? That's just the reality. So we have to own that and make education relevant. How does this apply to my life right now? And I think if we do that, are we going to get them all? It's going to be hard. But if we can make it relevant, then I think we've got a lot better chance, and our scores go up, and all those achievement gaps start getting filled in. So,
thank you. We have about 2 minutes left. So,
and this is just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't expect any of them to answer. I just encourage you, again, thank you for stepping up. But Sue Hall's parting words over in the Joint Education Committee, because we're talking about community and organizations and businesses partnering, but her words were kind of old-fashioned, because we're a lot of what we've been doing is what can we do to transform and be innovative, but it goes back to basics, and that's family engagement. So as you look for the community involvement, the keys to find, and it's tricky, there's no one way, but great teachers will somehow bring the family in. So I just encourage you to keep that in mind and work on that too. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I apologize for the fact that we have such short time, but this has been a wonderful discussion. I really appreciate your comments. I wish I had time to ask you more about homeschooling. My district is losing two schools because of lack of population. The solution to those parents, the district has said, you're going to have to homeschool your kids. And what I'd like to know from you, I'm not going to ask you right now, Laurie, but are we doing all we should be doing to help those homeschool parents? I think that's a It's a small population, a small portion of the population, but it's a very important issue. So again, just remarkable. I appreciate James' years of experience on the board. He brings that continuity. I appreciate Sandra and Laurie's experience as teachers and professionals working in the business, and I appreciate Tiffany's bringing in sort of the newest generation to that board. So I think what we're going to do now is what happens is we will sign a form that says that we have nothing against any of you, and we're sending your names on to the full Senate and House for confirmation, and I believe we've reached the point where we need to first need to ask any public testimony at all on these members who have been put forward for the State School Board. So I'll close the public hearing and ask for a motion. Senator Cargill.
Gladly. I move the following names appointees to the Alaska Board of Education and Early Development be forwarded to the joint session of the legislature for consideration. James Fields of Glen Allen, Sandra Kowalski of Fairbanks, Lori Van Deest of Palmer, and Tiffany Scott of Kotzebue.
Thank you very much. Is there any objection to that motion? If not, it passes, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the form and send it on to the House and the Senate. Thank you very much. Senate Education meeting back to order. And next we have up an appointee to the University of Alaska Board of Regents, Mr. Stephen Joey Sweet, student regent. Thank you for being with us today. Again, if you would please do what others had done, maybe a little personal background, what you bring to the Board of Regents, why are you interested in serving, and any goals you may have to bring to the board. Mr. Sweet.
Certainly. So as mentioned, my name is Stephen Sweet. I go by my middle name, Joey. I'm originally from the Matsu Valley. I've since moved to Anchorage to pursue my higher education. I graduated in the fall with a degree in political science. During my undergrad, I was actually able to participate in the legislative internship program here in the spring of 2016 semester. I graduated with that degree, and I'm currently pursuing a master's in public administration with an emphasis on the criminal justice system that I just started this semester. In terms of what I bring to the board, I would say that's the student perspective. Students right now are feeling certainly a lot of stress. The university has gone through a lot of pain these last few years because of budget cuts. We are seeing that in terms of morale. We are seeing that in terms of declining enrollment, a host of these institutional problems. However, that also speaks to my goals for the board and for the University of Alaska itself, which is to say that we need to right some of our wrongs that we've seen. We need to course correct. I think that this year, if we can get one good year for the university, then it's going to sort of break the fever. It's going to break the spell that has affected the university these last few years. I talk to my colleagues, be they student, staff, no matter what, anybody affiliated with the university, and right now it is certainly a time of low morale. But I feel like if we can get one good year under our belt, then that'll break us out of it, and we can sort of go back to a sense of normalcy, as it were. To be more specific, I'd like to see the university increase degree completion, which is to say increase recruitment, and then once those students have been recruited into the university, to keep them here. The university has undergone a lot of strategic thinking in terms of what is it that keeps a student in the university, both what is it that pulls in a student, and how do we keep and strengthen those institutionally, but also in terms of what is it that pushes a student out of the university. A good specific example of that I always like to highlight is that starting in the academic year 2019, the university will offer an emergency scholarship fund. It should be about $500,000, depending on how budget numbers shake out, but it will be available for students who incur an unexpected emergency cost during the course of their education. Oftentimes, that can be the kind of thing that makes the difference between finishing a semester and having to drop out for the term. Unexpected cost, flat tire, having to pay a month's rent in advance, something you didn't anticipate, the university can reimburse a student for that with this emergency scholarship fund. So I think that the university has undergone a lot of thought and put in a lot of effort towards a strategic plan for the future vis-a-vis student enrollment. enrollment being one of those mechanisms that we have to bring in revenue, it's very important for us to bring in those students and to keep them here. But as well, it's important to have them graduate on time or at their own pace. As we're looking at the rest of the nation, we are seeing a trend of students having to take longer to complete their undergrad. But in terms of graduating students, it works to help diversify the state's economy. We are graduating political science folks such as myself, but we're also graduating engineers and economists. A whole host of diverse graduates are being produced by the university at every campus we offer every year, and I think that that goes to work towards diversifying the economy and building a better future for the state of Alaska. One thing that University President Jim Johnson always likes to point out is you can name just about any sort of metric for success in a person's life, be it lifespan, likelihood that they will stay out of prison, any sort of good metric that you can have. Having a college diploma increases that. It increases how much money a person makes on average throughout the course of their life. Just about anything you can imagine that is good for a person goes up when they have a college degree, and that is certainly something that we understand and that we value at our institution. But with that, I think I'm ready to take any questions that might be asked of me.
Thank you, Mr. Sweet. So, a little housekeeping question. You are a student now. You're applying for a student regent position. How long is this term of office, and will you be able to complete it? What happened? If you complete your degree, will you not be on the board? How does that work?
Good question. The appointment is exactly May 31st, 2017 through May 31st, 2019. Other members of the board, their terms are in 8-year increments. The student regent is a 2-year position, which does maybe not give a ton of time for the whoever's in that position to really get caught up. But I think with my background, I was heavily involved with the university throughout my undergrad. I think that that served as a good foundation for getting into this position. I interacted with the board. I did public testimony before the board before having been appointed. I do anticipate that I will be a student throughout the entire duration of this time period, particularly having just started the Master's in Public Administration program this semester. It actually means I'm starting it behind because I'm starting it in the spring, so I do anticipate that I'll be a student for the entire duration.
Thank you, Mr. Sweet. So we have recommended to in education that whenever possible, students be appointed to any boards and commissions in the state. And could you tell us why that's important?
Excellent question. I think it, again, it comes down to the student perspective. Students are the ones with their eyes on every single square inch of, to use an example of the university, every single square inch of the entire campus. And with that, they see things that staff or faculty or administrators wouldn't simply be able to see just by virtue of that not being within their purview. I'm here in part because of the Coalition of Student Leaders Legislative Advocacy Trip, and we had a business meeting for our organization yesterday, and one of the students from Fairbanks, the Associated Students of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, their student governance organization, referenced that there aren't enough family-friendly bathrooms on campus, particularly for single parents, single male parents. So that's just simply not something that necessarily is going to occur to someone unless they're coming to campus frequently, they're taking their classes. For that particular example, if they're a single parent, it's just not something that's going to occur to somebody who isn't in that position. And I think the same can be said for a student. One of my other projects that I've been working on, it's since been kind of stalled, but there's a counterpart to this position that's the student commissioner, which is to say the student commissioner on post-secondary education, essentially student regent, but for that governing board for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And unfortunately, the gentleman in that position is going to be graduating, and that position doesn't have somebody lined up to replace him at the moment. So I've been trying to work to fill that vacancy for that exact purpose.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Hughes.
Thank you. One of the challenges that we've heard recently, and you talked at the very beginning about your goal to recruit more students and have more students successfully actually graduate with degrees or certificates, and yet we hear that an ongoing problem that a number of high school students needing remedial coursework, and the I don't remember the statistics, but it's alarmingly high, and that prolongs and just makes it more difficult, and I think it's discouraging to students. And there was some discussion of, rather than having students perhaps take these zero-level courses, could we get them into the 100 level with tutor support, stronger tutor support, and maybe keep them moving along at a better pace? Is that something you would support?
Through the chair, certainly. As a student who had to take a zero-level class when I was a freshman, that is the kind of thing that I would be supportive of, generally speaking. Part of that strategic budget allocation that we have is designed to, I do believe that there is funding in there for extra tutors. Again, the perspective being, what is it that brings in students, but also what is it that keeps them here? Certainly having better tutor hours available for students is going to be right up near the top of that list.
And a follow-up comment, a quick one. And I would hope, too, as the student on the Board of Regents, that you could also help be a bridge between the school districts across the state so that the students, of course, ideally would be graduating with their high school diplomas and ready for those 100-level courses. So anything that you can do in your work, that would be great for our state.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. So we know the importance of the relationship between the faculty and the students. Can you tell us who's your favorite faculty member and why? And I never taught him, so.
Well, I won't maybe name names specifically, but if there's something that I could highlight from UAA, when I started my degree, I knew that I wanted to do political science, but I also wanted to get a minor, and I didn't really know what. And then I took the Introduction to Justice class, and it completely changed my perspective from start to finish, both because of there being such an overlap between criminal justice and political science, but also because, as I found out, we had an absolute world-class staff within our Justice Center at UAA. They've come here and done lunch and learns, particularly about Title IX and sexual assault issues. And so I think there are all these different things about the university that are very high caliber, the UAA debate team, the rifle team in Fairbanks. But if I could highlight one thing in particular, I'd have to say the UAA Justice Center.
Thank you very much. We also have someone to testify. Thank you very much, Ms. Sweet. Thank you for your willingness to serve on the Board of Regents. I know you'll make a great regent. We also have Alec Burris. Is Alec here, if you'd come forward? Alec is asked to testify. Mr. Burris, if you'd say your name for the record and your...
Good morning. My name is Alec Burris. I'm a UA student, and I'm the current serving student body president at the university. I have worked with Regent Sweet over the past 2 years at the university, both within the student government when he was the government relations officer, and then as he has been serving as the student regent. He has truly enriched our engagement with the Board of Regents that I think we haven't seen in a while. He has really made it his mission to ensure that students are aware of what is going on at the Board of Regents and ensuring that they have a seat at the table and that they can go and speak with those members and engage with them. So he carries my full support, and I think my students would agree with that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Appreciate your being here. We will open this to public information, public testimony. Is anyone who wishes to speak to the appointment of Mr. Sweet? If not, we'll close that public testimony. Any questions in wrap-up? Thank you. Motion, please, Senator Coghill.
Sure. I move the following named appointee to the University of Alaska Board of Regents be forwarded to the joint session of the legislature for consideration, Mr. Stephen Joey Sweet of Anchorage.
Thank you. Is there any objection to that motion? If not, the motion passes, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the document. I just remind you that this does not reflect the intent of anyone to vote for or against the confirmation, but we'll go to a joint meeting of the House and the Senate. Brief at ease. Is there any further business to come before us? If not, we're adjourned at 8:58.